The Haunted UK podcast is produced and released in stereo. Listening through an environment such as headphones or stereo speakers will ensure you get the best experience.
Are you ready to dive into the depths of intrigue and unravel the caffeinated enigmas that surround us?
Look no further than the electrifying world of Caffeinated Conspiracies, the podcast that's about to jolt your curiosity awake.
Join us for a caffeine-fueled adventure where every sip and every secret is a clue waiting to be deciphered.
In each episode, our dynamic hosts delve into the most thought-provoking and jaw-dropping theories that will leave you wide-eyed and pondering. From mysterious artifacts all the way to the depths of the ocean, cover-ups, conspiracies, the unknown, all with a cup of coffee.
Available on all major podcast platforms, subscribe now and stay tuned for mind-blowing episodes that will leave you questioning everything. Remember, truth is stranger than fiction. So let's dive into the mysteries together. Join us on Caffeinated Conspiracies, satisfying your curiosity one cup at a time.
Here at Haunted UK Podcast Towers, we're committed to giving you high-quality, great episodes time after time after time. But this takes a lot of effort in research, writing, editing, recording, mixing, mastering, and publishing. We don't have a fancy production company or a bank of scriptwriters or a large budget to keep everything going. We are a fully independent podcast. If you'd like to help the show, then why not get over to Ko-fi and search for the Haunted UK podcast, where you can subscribe to give just £3 per month, the price of a coffee, or as much as you like. If you'd rather not sign up for a monthly subscription, then you can simply make a one-off donation, again, as little or as much as you like. This really helps the show with our website, Ko-fi membership, merchandise, equipment, as well as other financial commitments. So if you feel that you'd like to help keep the lights burning, the wheels turning, and the stories rolling, then why not consider getting over to Ko-fi and donating to the show? That's Ko-fi and search for the Haunted UK podcast. Thank you. And here are the names of the amazing people who have donated to the show recently. They are Donna Jays, Yana Kopaskova, and last but not least, Jem J. We also now have some exciting new merchandise available on our website, including mugs, mouse mats, drink bottles, bags, t-shirts, hoodies, and even bottle openers. Get yourself over to www.hauntedukpodcast.com to check out our Etsy shop. Now, without any further delay, let's get this episode started. While we were all talking, a horrible feeling swept over me. We had to go back in there. All of our camera equipment was still inside, and we were also key holders, which meant that we were responsible for the building while we were there. We had to lock up and make sure the building was secure. We all agreed to wait a while and then go back to get our things, lock up, and leave. After an hour or so, we cautiously walked back to the room to grab our equipment. As we stepped inside, we couldn't believe what we saw. The place looked like it had been ransacked, with things thrown in all directions. Quickly, we gathered everything, locked the building, posted the keys through the manager's office letterbox, and left. This is episode 49 of the Haunted UK podcast, and in this episode, we'll hear from both James and Andrew on their terrifying experiences with the paranormal, which are still very much attached. So, can something from the paranormal attach itself to an unsuspecting host? A spirit? An entity? An elemental? Which could not only terrify and frighten you, but could also cause you to question your own sanity. There are many cases of this happening to completely innocent people, and there is a struggle to convince those around them that something truly, not of our understanding, is happening to them. The problem we have with many of these cases is the lack of witnesses. Credible people who have been fortunate enough, or unfortunate enough as you're about to hear in the two cases in this episode, to bear witness to these strange and sometimes harrowing events. But that's not the situation that both James and Andrew found themselves in. They weren't the only ones to see what they did. And their experiences still continue to this very day. In fact, it's an ongoing live ghost story they still have to unwillingly feature in every day as the haunted protagonists, their very own non-stop horror film. Yet both of their stories start in completely innocent circumstances. They didn't mean for any of this to happen. So before we continue, I'd just like to relay my most grateful thanks to both James and Andrew for writing in and telling your stories. This entire set of experiences begins with James, and this episode contains strong language which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Caution is advised. James writes, "I would like to stay anonymous other than giving my forename, James. I've also been asked by my manager not to mention, by name, the historical site which is featured in this story. I love the podcast, and it's inspired me to tell my story. So, my name is James, and my story starts in the winter of 2003, and still continues to some degree, to this day. As I sit writing this now, I can hear footsteps upstairs on the landing, muffled sounds coming from the room above, and only a few minutes ago, I heard someone whistling in the hallway and on the upper landing. This would normally be okay, but I'm the only person in the house. However, I've now become accustomed to these noises over the years as strange, unexplainable things periodically manifest themselves in my home. I will explain. So, let's start from the beginning. Since I was a child, I've had a keen interest in history, archaeology, and historical buildings. Later in adulthood, I decided to study archaeology at college, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It was this that paved the way for the events in this story. This all started in the early spring of 2002, after I'd finished at college. I decided to start photographing all the historical places I loved to visit. So I bought myself an expensive and capable camera for the job. I guess it was my sister who first got me involved with photography, as she is an art teacher and mentioned that I should photograph these places, as I might get some good shots. So in early 2002, I brought the camera, some equipment, and started visiting places, trying to get the best photos I could. I had a couple of close friends who also had an interest in history and would come with me at weekends. After a few visits to some amazing historical sites, that summer we decided to set up a small historical and photographic group so we could meet other like-minded people and go around the country visiting these historical places and photographing them. We'd go in all weathers, taking some real breathtaking photos. And some of our best photos were taken at sunrise and sunset. We'd sometimes stay until nightfall whenever it was a moonlit night to get the best artistic shots we could. Sometimes we'd stay up all night until sunrise, taking photos of these amazing historical buildings and the nocturnal wildlife in and around these majestic places. Our main interests were castles, abbeys, mansions, and ancient monuments, but our photographs would often also capture all of the wildlife connected with these buildings, such as bats, rabbits, hedgehogs, foxes, all the usual. Members of our group would occasionally comment about a particular site being haunted, but personally, I'd never believed in ghosts, the paranormal, or anything like that. I've always thought there is a rational explanation for everything, but that was until the winter of 2002 and 2003, when we were given permission to stay all night in the grounds and rooms of an old abbey turned manor house. However, before I tell this story, I would like to give you a little history about the manor house in question, as I believe it to be relevant to this story. The manor house started out its life as a Cistercian abbey in the 1100s, where monks lived and worked for the next 400 years. However, in the 1500s, the abbey, like all abbeys in England, was pulled down by King Henry VIII with the dissolution of the monasteries. This particular abbey was partly saved, and the king gave the abbey to an earl, who then started work on it to make it his home. Over the following decades, the abbey was extended, eventually becoming a Jacobean mansion owned in succession by several earls and barons of the same family until the 1950s, when it then became too dangerous to live in due to dry rot and other structural problems. Eventually, the owners moved out and the building was left derelict for several years until it was saved by the local council, who bought the house to preserve it as a historical building of importance to the local area. Unfortunately, a lot of the house was structurally too dangerous to be left standing, so at least half of it had to be destroyed. There is only one part of the Jacobean building and original abbey left, which was the servants' quarters, but it's still an impressive building nonetheless. I believe it was in the 1970s that the building was opened to the public, and in the midst of some thick, dark, rather eerie woodland, stands the old house, still offering some of the finest gardens in England today, including a fairly large lake, so it makes it an ideal place for families to visit for picnics and days out. After our initial meeting with the estate manager, we made arrangements to pick up the keys for the main car park gate and abbey rooms from the staff in the gift shop, and then we waited until the public had left before we set up our cameras around the building and in the gardens, hoping to get some great shots of the building and local wildlife. I would also like to mention that we felt very privileged to be allowed to stop all night in such an old and beautiful place when it was closed to the public. It was also agreed that we would give copies of all of the photos we took to the estate manager so that he could use them for advertisements and leaflets, etc. if he wanted. It was a good arrangement that suited both parties. Once the place was shut and everyone had left, we headed to the two abbey rooms underneath the monks' dormitory to drop off some of the equipment and our flasks of coffee to keep us going through the night. There was nothing in these two rooms other than information boards, but it was an ideal space for us to get shelter if it rained and to grab a coffee during the night. We were not allowed into the main manor house building, as that was alarmed and out of bounds to the public. It started off like any other night. We'd set up placing time-lapse cameras around the building and gardens, and then just sit quietly, hoping to catch local wildlife whilst one of us, usually me, would walk around taking photos of the building at different angles, just as the sun was setting or in full moonlight. It was around 10:30 p.m. and all seemed unusually quiet. We'd not seen a single rabbit or any nocturnal wildlife this whole time, which we all thought was a tad weird. But we decided to grab a coffee inside the monks' dining room, where it was a little warmer, but not much. We sat there just chatting amongst ourselves when we heard a loud bang coming from the room next door, which was the guests' warming room, as it was known. The bang didn't particularly bother us, as it's an old building, and we just thought it must have been something settling as it cooled during the night. However, it happened again just a few minutes later. So I jumped up and headed to the room next door, fearing someone was breaking in, or possibly local kids vandalizing the building. This type of disturbance had happened in the past. However, as I walked towards the door that separated both rooms, the dining room and warming room, I noticed the door was wide open, which I knew had been shut. I shouted for Neil and Robert, or Bob as he's known, thinking we had intruders, and we all went inside the room expecting somebody to be in there. With only torchlights to see, as there were no lights or electric in that room either, we slowly walked into the room not knowing what to expect. We entered the room and looked all around and found no one there. So we shut the door and returned into the monks' dining room to finish our coffee. After approximately 10 minutes or so, we finished our drinks and headed outside to take some night shots of the building and gardens. However, we noticed that all the batteries in the digital cameras had drained, as we could see the battery lights were flashing empty. This was very unusual, as the batteries were new and fully charged, but we just put it down to the cold weather draining the batteries. So, we decided to have a walk around the building with our analog or film cameras and take some shots, as it was such a clear and bright moonlit night. After a couple of hours unsuccessfully waiting for the wildlife to make an appearance, we decided to go back to the monks' dining room to get warm, as it was winter and fairly cold at this time. We all mentioned again how strange it was that no wildlife was around, and wondered if everything was hibernating. It was now around 1 a.m, and we decided to pack up as we'd got enough footage of the building and gardens, and it seemed like the wildlife wasn't going to make an appearance. So we started packing up the equipment, when we again heard a very loud bang coming from the other room. We all looked at each other and ran to the other room, hoping to catch whatever or whoever was making these loud noises. But again, I found no person or animal in the room. We were completely baffled as to what could be making the noise. So again, we just shut the door and headed back to finish packing up our cameras and other equipment. However, as we headed back, we heard the warming room door slowly open behind us, followed by the sound of heavy footsteps. We stopped, and Bob jokingly said it must be a ghost, to which I replied, "No such thing. It has to be a fox or something." Bob then replied, "What, a two-legged fox with heavy boots on?" and laughed. So this time I said to Bob and Neil, "Watch this." And I shouted, "Whoever you are, come in this room if you dare. Or are you scared of us?" Laughing at the same time. Immediately Bob said, "I wouldn't do that if I were you. We don't want to antagonize whatever it is." Quickly I replied, "Don't be daft." And shouted, "I don't believe in ghosts. And you don't scare us, you coward." The footsteps suddenly stopped. And again, half joking and slightly laughing under my breath, I shouted, "Come in here, if you dare." Suddenly everything went very quiet, and we heard the loud footsteps coming towards our room. We all shone our torches in the direction of the footsteps and just stood there in silence, looking and waiting. Next, we heard the heavy footsteps walking directly towards us, but we couldn't see anyone. We all stood looking and listening to these loud footsteps coming closer and closer, when they finally stopped directly in front of us. We all then heard a deep, guttural growl, and in response to this, Neil hissed, "What the fuck was that?" Literally a second later, I felt something, some sort of force, hit my chest, causing me to stumble backwards into our camping coffee table, which tipped over, sending all of our mugs and flasks flying all over the room. I shouted to everyone to just get out, and we all ran towards the door. Just as I reached the door that leads to the outside, I looked back to see a tall, black shape, which resembled a man in black robes, looking directly at us. But he didn't have a face. It was just a void where a face would be. We continued running until we reached our cars in the car park. Once at the cars, we gathered ourselves together and all asked the same question. What the fuck had just happened? I freely admitted that I didn't know, but there was no way that I was going back in there. Bob even said, "Did you see that thing?" I asked him what he saw, and it was the exact same thing that I'd seen when I got to the door and looked back. While we were all talking, a horrible feeling swept over me. We had to go back in there. All of our camera equipment was still inside, and we were also key holders, which meant that we were responsible for the building while we were there. We had to lock up and make sure the building was secure. We all agreed to wait a while and then go back to get our things, lock up, and leave. After an hour or so, we cautiously walked back to the room to grab our equipment. As we stepped inside, we couldn't believe what we saw. The place looked like it had been ransacked, with things thrown in all directions. Quickly, we gathered everything, locked the building, posted the keys through the manager's office letterbox, and left. It was the following week when I finally decided to go back to see the estate manager to tell him what had happened. I was expecting him to laugh at me, but he just looked at me and said, "You're not the only one who's told me this." He then went on to explain his staff have had similar experiences, doors opening and closing by themselves, strange lights and footsteps being heard when they would be locking up, but then, of course, finding no one there. The manager then went on to tell me that in the 18th century, the warming room was allegedly used as a place of satanic worship and rituals by a baron, and it is believed that he, the Baron, and several other ghosts still haunt the building, including whatever else was in there, whatever they'd conjured up. So, you would think that after the experiences which took place on that cold winter's night, that James's encounters with the paranormal would be over. But they weren't. James continues. It was now around 2 weeks after the Manor House and Abbey Room incident that I noticed strange things happening in my house. Firstly, I would notice the taps in the bathroom would turn on by themselves. One particular morning, I was taking the kids to school, and just as I was walking out of the front door, I heard the whoosh of the hot water boiler lighting up, as it would if you turned the hot water taps on. I ran upstairs, and all the taps in the bathroom were fully opened and running. This would happen randomly over the following weeks. It got so bad that I got a plumber in to fix the problem, but he just said that the taps turning on by themselves wasn't really possible, and he advised changing all the taps to see if that would stop it. So I agreed. He changed them all, but it still kept happening. One day I came home after dropping the kids off at school and went to get a shower. As I opened the bathroom door, I physically saw all the taps turning on at the same time by themselves. I stood there trying to figure out what was happening. Eventually, I walked into the bathroom and turned them all off and went downstairs. It was at this point that I knew something was badly wrong. Later that day, I phoned both Bob and Neil to see if anything strange was happening in their houses. They both said yes, but didn't want to say anything for fear of being laughed at or at risk of scaring their partners and kids. Occasionally, the taps would still turn on by themselves, but this would be nothing to what would happen next. This particular day, I had to be up early for work, so I went to bed after the 10 o'clock news. It just seemed like any other night, and as I started to fall asleep, something grabbed my ankles and pulled me under the duvet. I quickly scrambled the covers off me and said, "What are you doing?" expecting that it was my wife who was just playing a prank on me. I sat up and looked around the room, and no one was there. I went downstairs and asked my wife if she had just been in our bedroom, but she said no. She was just watching the end of a TV program and then was going to come up to bed. I didn't tell her what had just happened, but I had a very uneasy sleep that night. The next evening, we both went to bed after the news, and everything seemed fine. However, at 3:20 a.m., I was woken up by a strange noise coming from downstairs. It sounded like a flock of birds flying around the living room, which is situated directly below our bedroom. I woke my wife, and she could hear the strange noise too. I was convinced we had burglars, so I crept downstairs and told my wife to get ready to phone the police if I shouted to her. As I crept downstairs, the noise became louder, and I half expected to get into a scuffle with whoever had broken in. I opened the living room door, turned on the lights, and was confronted by what I can only describe as dozens of semi-transparent large black butterflies flying around in a vortex-like pattern in the corner of the room. These things were about the size of a piece of A4 paper and were just going round and round like a whirlwind in the corner of the room. I stood looking at them for several seconds, then closed my eyes, thinking I was hallucinating. When I opened my eyes, they were still there, so I turned the lights off and on three times. But they were still there. This time, I turned the lights off for around 1 minute before turning them back on. This time they'd gone, and it was silent. I went upstairs and my wife asked me what it was. I didn't want to alarm her, so just said the window had been left slightly open and it was blowing the curtains. Needless to say, I never slept a wink that night. The following 2 days and nights were quiet, other than the horrendous nightmares I was now having. These dreams became so disturbing that I'd wake up most nights screaming. It was a few days later when Bob and Neil came round for a chat and a coffee that I told them about what had been happening in my house and my nightmares. It was at this point when I mentioned the things flying in my living room that a cup lifted up and went flying across the room, smashing against the opposite wall. Neil stood up and said, "What the fuck was that? What's happening?" I asked him to ignore it and to sit back down. I explained that I was trying to ignore what was going on, but both Neil and Bob said that I needed to get help from someone who knew about these things. I just replied by telling them that I'd deal with it myself, and they left, repeating that I really should get help. It was now the weekend, Saturday night, and my wife was out with friends on a girls' night out. The kids were stopping with my parents, as they did every other weekend, and I decided to have a quiet night in watching TV. It was around 8 p.m. and I was sat on the sofa watching TV when, out of the corner of my eye, I saw something moving in the far end of the room opposite me. So I turned and looked. Mesmerized and absolutely petrified, I watched as this semi-transparent black shape slowly rose from the floor. I sat there, my eyes transfixed on this thing rising out from nowhere. Not the ghoulish butterflies, but similar in the sheer fear it evoked. It had no particular shape, other than it seemed to have shoulders, a head, finally enfolding and rising to about 5 feet. It then moved in the blink of an eye, shooting faster than the speed of light towards where the TV is situated directly opposite me, and I jumped up in pure primal fear. This was all happening faster than I could understand or process, but it then stopped, turned, and shot straight in my direction.
Oh my God!
And seemed to go into the floor and under where I was sat. I jumped onto the sofa, pulling my feet up and looked all around. I then jumped off the sofa and ran for my life, or so it felt, into the dining room. After gathering myself together, I returned into the living room and started to look under the sofa and all around. But there was nothing there. I know what I saw. I wasn't hallucinating. I have never taken drugs, and I hadn't had a drink that night. It was real. Up until this point, I was fairly relaxed about everything else because I kept saying to myself, there has to be a rational explanation. But this now deeply worried me and shook me up. That night, I didn't sleep much at all, and I had an awful feeling someone or something was stood at the bedroom door watching me. The following morning, I contacted a good friend who had an interest in the paranormal and told him what was happening. I asked if he would come over and not to mention anything to anyone about what I'd told him. He agreed, and I asked if he could come over on the Wednesday evening when everyone was out. He asked if he could bring a friend who claimed to be a spirit medium. Personally, I don't believe people can communicate with the dead, but I agreed anyway. That Wednesday evening, my wife and kids were out, and my friend came around at about 6 p.m. with his medium friend. I made us all a drink and we sat chatting for a while about what was happening in the house, when something caught my eye up in the corner of the ceiling. I looked up, and there was one of those massive, semi-transparent black butterflies, exactly the same as what I'd witnessed a few nights prior. As soon as I looked directly at it, it shot across the ceiling, followed by two others, where they just disappeared into thin air. I then heard my friend say out loud, "What the fuck was that?" I turned around, and both my friend and the medium were looking in the same direction. I looked directly at the medium, asking if he had any idea what these entities or spirits were. He simply replied that whatever they weren't good, and continued by saying, "I haven't seen anything like that before, but I'm getting the feeling that you've been somewhere, and something has latched onto you and followed you home." I then told the medium about the black shape rising from the floor on Friday evening. Again, he just replied, "I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's not good. And neither are those things that flew across your ceiling." I asked if there was anything that could be done to get rid of these things. I was instructed to buy some herbs, frankincense, crystals, and something else, which for the life of me I can't remember, and put them in every room. He said he'd come back in a week or two to see how things were progressing. I did what he said, even though I felt ridiculous doing it. And for the next few days and nights, nothing else happened. However, when I went into my daughter's bedroom and into the attic a few days later, I noticed that a full-length mirror that I had fixed on the wall of her bedroom had been unscrewed, taken down, and put into her wardrobe. My daughter was around 10 years old at the time, and I doubted very much whether she would have been able to not only unscrew the mirror from the wall, but to then carry it to her wardrobe and put it inside. I asked my daughter, who had taken the mirror down, and she just said, "I don't know." So I asked her brother, and he said they had both taken it down together with a screwdriver from the garage. I was totally surprised by this and asked why they'd taken it down. And the explanation I received was horrifying. My son told me that his sister kept seeing an ugly, horrible, monster-type man staring back at her whenever she looked into that mirror. I asked if he could describe what this thing looked like, but he would only say that it was an ugly monster. I asked if he'd seen it too. He looked at me, then looked away and confirmed that yes, he had. He added that while we were asleep in bed, they would wake up in the middle of the night and hear people talking on the landing outside our bedroom. He said they just mumbled and he couldn't understand anything they said. I asked why they hadn't told me any of this and he said they were just too scared. After that, I got rid of the mirror and contacted the medium again. A few days later, my friend and the medium came round. The medium walked around the house and said that he could still feel whatever it was. He was quite honest, admitting that he didn't know what to do next. His parting advice, though, chilled me to the core. He said, "Things like this don't usually last long, because it's not your house that's haunted. It's you." They both left and said that they would keep in touch with me, but it might just simply be a case of learning to live with it, or move out. I refused to move out or be forced out, and I'm still here today, 20 years on. Over the next several years and even to the present day, strange things continue to happen in my house, but not on the same scale or intensity as those few weeks after our encounter at the Abbey. We still go to the Abbey and Manor House, but we tend to keep away from the rooms and have a coffee in the cars, rather than in the Abbey dining room or warming room. We keep both of those rooms locked. We also visit many other historical sites and buildings, and over the past 20 years we have witnessed many other strange things we cannot explain. But nothing like that one night in 2002, and the strange occurrences that followed me to my home. Finally, I completely understand that people will question what happened to me and my friends, but it truly happened, and before this, I really didn't believe in the paranormal. Now though, I'm more open-minded if someone tells me something strange has happened to them. Best regards, James. This is now where the second set of truly astonishing events begin. We now hear from James's friend, Andrew. Both James and Andrew had been friends for a number of years, but Andrew had no idea that the seemingly innocent events which were about to take place in a castle would change his and his partner's life forever. There is also one disturbing theory that begins to rear its head, and that is, could James himself have been responsible for what was about to happen? Whatever this parasitic entity was, which had seemingly attached itself to James, could it have unlocked something else in an entirely different location? This is Andrew's story. My name is Andrew, and I've known James for a number of years, who I met through a work colleague, and it was ever since a visit to a castle with James and his small group of historical and photography enthusiasts in 2014 that our lives drastically changed. Since this visit, my partner Graham and I have been struggling with strange supernatural events that we can't explain. The castle in question is 12th century, in the Lower Midlands. The castle has a keep, a large main room, three smaller rooms and a gatehouse, including a room that the gardeners use for storage. However, I'd prefer not to mention the name of the castle. It all started on a warm spring evening in May, when everything changed for me and my partner. I heard that James and his group were going to visit the castle, not far from where I lived, that coming weekend. As I already knew James and his wife, I sent him a message asking if myself and Graham could join them, to which he replied, "Of course, but don't forget to bring warm clothes and coffee, as we plan on staying the whole night as the forecast is good, and it's going to be a clear moonlit night." I was fairly excited, because I'd never stopped all night at a castle. That weekend, we all met at the castle at around 8 p.m. James unlocked the gates, and we all helped unload the cars. James and his group, Rob, Stuart, Steve and his wife, started to set up an array of cameras around the castle, and I was asked to check and clear the main big room of any rubbish. The room was situated next to the groundkeeper's room, where he kept the gardening equipment. It was now around 9 p.m. and just starting to get dark. James gave me the keys for the big room he wanted cleared, so I unlocked the room's door and went inside. It had no electrical lighting, so I turned on my head torch. I was surprised how big and dark the room was. It also looked empty, with not much rubbish laying around. Once inside, I suddenly felt very uneasy and nauseous. I'd felt perfectly fine before I walked inside this room, but this change was almost instantaneous. As I walked further inside and shone my head torch around the room, I noticed a large star, or pentagram shape, around 12 inches from top to toe, etched into the stonework at the far end of the room. I never particularly thought anything about it, other than thinking it was probably a piece of medieval graffiti or something like that. However, I also noticed below the pentagram was a fairly large, round, thick wooden table, surrounded by six chairs with something on it. I walked over to take a look and found a wooden board with strange words, numerals, and the moon carved, or burnt, into the thick wooden board. At first, I thought it might be some kind of artifact display, so I touched it expecting a taped voice would begin telling me some history about the artifact. But instead of a voice, the whole table started to vibrate and shake, which made me jump. Just then, Steve poked his head through the door and said, "Sorry, wrong room, we're not allowed in here," and disappeared. So I started to walk back across the room to the door when I distinctly heard a male voice say,
"Get out."
I turned around, half expecting my partner to be there trying to frighten me, but I was the only one in that room. I then heard something moving. I turned to where the noise had come from and noticed the table and chairs had moved. So I now started to run towards the door, but just as I got near it, the door slammed shut, making a loud bang. I know a gust of wind could have slammed the door, but there was no wind whatsoever that night. It was a very still and calm evening. By now, I was absolutely terrified. I'd never experienced anything like this before. I tried to open the door, but it had jammed shut. So I started to shout and swear loudly.
"For fuck's sake, help me, open the door!"
Trying to get someone's attention after what seemed like a lifetime, but was probably only a few seconds, the door opened on its own. I ran out, shut the door behind me and locked it. I have never been so scared in my life. I know what I heard, and I know the table moved when I touched it. This wasn't my imagination. I then ran to my partner and said that I didn't feel very well and needed to go home. I made some excuse to the guys about having to work in the morning, but the reality was, I just wanted to get out of that place as fast as I could. I never told James about what had happened that night until a few months ago when I asked him for some help or advice, because whatever was in that room did not stop after I locked that door. It was probably 6 months or so after the castle incident that we moved into our new house, and around a month or so after this, I started to notice strange things happening in our new home. At first, I'd hear things moving when I was alone in the house. Then a couple of weeks later, all the brand new electrical appliances would stop working. This was followed by plumbing problems and water leaks springing up everywhere. Then I became very ill and unable to work. I would wake up virtually every night at 3:33 a.m. after having horrendous nightmares, leaving me unable to get back to sleep. It seemed like all of my energy was being drained out of me, and I was now even struggling to walk to the bathroom. This went on for several weeks until I took a turn for the worse and I was admitted to hospital. The doctors and consultants told my partner and me that they just didn't know what was wrong and they would therefore need to keep me in for more tests. By this time, I had gone downhill very rapidly, and then one night when I became seriously ill, the doctors rang my partner and told him to get to the hospital as quickly as he could, as they didn't think I'd make it through the night. My partner arrived around 2 a.m. and my parents were driving from Scotland. I don't remember much about that night other than feeling awful. Then I had a sudden feeling of warmth, a feeling like when you're a kid falling asleep and your mum would pick you up and wrap you up in her arms, like a warm and secure feeling. to the amazement of the doctors and nurses. I made it through the night. I woke up at around 6 a.m., seeing my partner sat there just looking at me, asking if I was all right. I instantly sat upright in bed and said yes. I felt great, baffled as to why and how I was in hospital. He then told me what the doctors had said, and that my parents were stuck in traffic, but on their way. 2 days later, I was discharged from hospital, and to this day, the doctors have no idea what was wrong with me or how I'd suddenly got better. For the next few weeks, I took it easy, then eventually went back to work. It was around this time both myself and my partner again started to notice strange things happening in the house. First, we noticed the electric cooker would be turned on when we returned home from work. Then the new washing machine stopped working and leaked all over the utility room floor. Our internet connection would suddenly stop every single night at the same time, 9:33 p.m. There was also a horrible smell coming from the drinking water and drains. It was so bad that we began using bottled water until the water board could come in and check it out. Then the drains would block up for no apparent reason. Then we noticed we were getting astronomically high electricity bills. Every time we had a plumber, electrician, or internet technician come round, which was now at least once a week, they would all say the same things like, "This just shouldn't be happening," or "We can't find any problems," or "I've never come across anything like this." This went on for weeks. Then if things couldn't get any worse, events began to turn more sinister. I was sat in the living room watching TV in the afternoon and heard a loud bang on the window. I went to look and found a dead bird on the floor. Then two more bangs on the opposite window, and two more dead birds. These birds flew into the windows for no apparent reason. This went on for several weeks. At least once a day a bird, sometimes two or more, would just fly into our windows. We'd come home every evening from work and literally pick up dead birds from all around the house. It got so bad, I phoned the RSPCA and other organizations that looked after birds, asking for any advice. They suggested that we keep our blinds and curtains closed throughout the day. This would then make the windows look solid and visible, but it didn't solve the problem. We even asked the neighbors if they were having similar problems, and they all replied no. But around 3 weeks later, this strange and eerie phenomena stopped just as quickly as it had started. No more dead birds. For a couple of months, the activity seemed to come to a complete stop, and as it was now summer, we started decorating the house and doing some work in the garden. It was when we started decorating the house that the strange events started again. This particular weekend, we were both at home. I was in the living room and Graham was outside attending to some gardening chores when I heard Graham shout my name.
"Andrew!"
I shouted back, "What's up?" I then heard Graham shout my name again, but this time he sounded angry.
"Andrew!"
So I shouted again, "What's up? I'm busy." And this was followed by a loud,
"Come here!"
I walked into the kitchen where I thought I'd heard him shout me from, and was just about to say what's wrong, when I noticed he wasn't there. I looked through the window and could see him in the garden planting seeds and small ferns. I went outside and asked, "Did you just shout me?" Graham replied, "No. I told him what I'd heard and he assured me it wasn't him." I really need to point out, I did not imagine this. I really did hear his voice, or something mimicking his voice, shout my name. And that really scared me. That night, I went up to bed and it was around 3 a.m. that I woke up and felt something sit down on the side of the bed. I looked and saw an imprint in the bed covers, as if someone or something was sat there. I sat upright, looked, and at that point the bed lifted up and slammed back down. I shot out of bed thinking what on earth was going on. I really don't know what caused the bed to lift and slam down, but I didn't imagine it. I was wide awake when it happened. It was around a week later, as I was getting ready for work, that I received an email from a woman in Germany. I translated the email, and it said this: "I'm sorry for my intrusion. You don't know me, but you have recently been to a castle. There was something very bad in that castle, and you joined with it, and it joined with you. You've brought it home with you. I've also been told this bad spirit made you ill. You may not know this, but you are like a bright light to the spirit world. Unfortunately, the spirits follow you into your home, causing problems. Most of them don't mean you harm, but the bad spirit will try to cause you harm if you don't get help. I would like to help you, but I live in Germany and I am too old to travel to the UK. So I will try and help you from here. Ida." I was absolutely gobsmacked and showed the email to Graham, asking if he knew this person. He replied that he had no idea who she was. I emailed her back, asking how she'd got my email address and, well, who was she? She replied, but it didn't make any sense. Other than that, she claimed to be a spiritual person who would help us out, but she never gave us any further information. After that, we heard no more. To this day, I still don't know who she is or how she got my email address, but after that email, things did settle down for a while. However, it was during lockdown, when we were both working from home, that things suddenly became active again. Both my partner and I would wake up and see a figure at the end of the bed. We'd hear laughing and mumbling coming from the dining room and kitchen during the night. Then after the last lockdown, we went to visit my parents in Scotland, and it started there too. I honestly believed it followed us to my parents' house in Scotland. My dad was mostly bedbound, and we'd hear him shout us from his bedroom, so one of us would go to see what he wanted, only to find him fast asleep. This went on for the whole week we were there. We would also hear footsteps running around upstairs when no one else was there. We all heard these noises, and my mum was slightly worried and started asking questions. It got to a point where I had to tell her everything. She never batted an eyelid and just said, "Don't worry. People up there will be looking after you. They have been looking out for you so far," referring to the time I was in hospital. The following week, we returned home and I went into the kitchen. It was like a sauna. I discovered all of the hobs and the oven and the electric cooker were switched on full blast, and the kitchen was flooded. I then heard Graham shout that the bathroom was full of water. Both rooms were flooded. I can understand that kitchens and bathrooms can flood, but we both know without question that the cooker was turned off when we left for Scotland, and we would never use every hob and the oven at the same time, especially on the morning we left. This was when I decided to contact James, as we wanted to know if anything like this had ever happened to him or the guys in his historical group. A week or so later, James and a couple of the guys from the group came to my house for a chat. I told them everything that had happened since that night at the castle. James and the guys were stunned, but then went on to tell me about their experiences with the supernatural. This made me feel a little better. I wasn't going mad. But I also wasn't alone. Things still happen in my house and whenever I visit my parents in Scotland, but I don't let it worry me anymore. We've learned to live with it, but there are times when I feel a little fed up with it all, driving me to shout, "Please stop it." Andrew. So it's now over to all of you listeners to digest the events in these stories. Did something truly evil attach itself to both James and Andrew and follow them home? Did the buildings they visit harbor something that only they could make contact with? Was it because both men were open and susceptible to this phenomena without actually knowing it? James even stated that he was never a believer in ghosts or the paranormal up until that night. All the members of the photography group who were there with James on that first faithful night in the Abbey saw something. But only James was selected by the entity as its host. Did he draw and summon and conjure up this attachment to him when, at the height of his cynicism, he playfully taunted whatever was there at the manor house? "Whoever you are, come into this room if you dare," he once shouted into the dark corridor of that old house. Well, whatever it was, it certainly dared. And as we draw a close to our ninth and final regular episode of this current season, we have to question how and why do these things happen? What strange forces are behind these parasitic-like entities? Witchcraft? Worship of a long-dead demonic idol? We can only speculate. But maybe, the next time you visit a castle or stately home with a haunted reputation, you should exercise a little caution before someone has to exorcise you with holy water, salt, and prayer, because the next person to be the victim of a terrifying attachment could be you. Do you have an interesting story which you'd be willing to share with the show? If so, your story could feature in our end-of-season Listener Stories episodes. Please get in touch with the show via email at contactus@hauntedukpodcast.com, marking the subject as Listener Story. We're waiting for your stories. As well as coffee, you can also follow the Haunted UK Podcast on Twitter at hauntedukpod and on Instagram at Haunted UK Podcast. You can also find us on our website at www.hauntedukpodcast.com, where you'll be able to keep up to date with news and announcements, browse and download our episode scripts, get in touch with us, and much, much more. This episode was presented by Steve, produced by Pink Flamingo Home Studio, which you can also find on Instagram by searching for at Pink Flamingo Home Studio. The script for this episode was edited by Marie Waller Proofreading. For more information about this service, contact Marie at mariewaller.proofreading@gmail.com. For a list of all research sources which we found helpful for the writing of this episode, please see the show's notes. Thank you again for listening to and supporting the Haunted UK Podcast. So until the next episode, stay safe and take care.